powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
How soon is too soon to panic in MLB? And how's the rest of the league looking? Let's bring on USA Today's Bob Nightingale on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Bob, how's it going?
Yeah, doing well. Thank you.
We are looking at a Mariners team that's fallen into last place in the AL West. And, Bob, there are some Fatalist fans here who aren't surprised at all, which will happen when you miss the playoffs for that long. But for the most part, people here are really disappointed. Are you surprised to see this team struggling as much as they have?
Yeah, very surprised. I think most people, you know, predicted the Mariners to, you know, be candidate to win the AL West, certainly be a wild card team and end that streak. I mean, you know, when they signed Robbie Ray and make the moves they did, you know, there was a lot of confidence in spring training that this was the year the streak would finally end. And, yeah, I don't think anybody thought this was coming to be in last place, particularly behind, you know, teams like the Oakland A's.
Bob, there's certainly many areas that you could point to and say, gosh, this has been a big reason why they have struggled so much this year. But in your mind, what would be the number one thing that you would point to with this team that just simply has not been good enough or have lived up to expectations, as you mentioned, before the season started?
Well, I think they're really missing the veteran leadership in that clubhouse. You know, there's not that veteran there that guys lean on. And I think when guys struggle, it's like, okay, let me get some advice or, you know, consolation from guys who have been there and done that. You know, Seager was one of those guys for sure in that clubhouse. I just think they missed that leadership. And, you know, they don't have it. There's so many young players in that team, and I think we're going through a free-for-all like they are now. It just gets worse. It's just sometimes I think they wonder where to turn.
When you look at this team, is it a team that you think, like, hey, these are things that can turn around over the course of a very long baseball season? Or do they look like a team that just frankly is not a good team?
Well, there are a lot of games. It's not like they're getting, you know, blown out
right, and
losing a ton of close games. So, you know, it can turn around. And we saw that last year with Atlanta. I mean, certainly they bounced back. When the Washington Nationals won their World Series, I think they were 19-31 at one point. But, you know, they were about Memorial Day here, time to turn it around. And, you know, Houston's not going anywhere. Los Angeles Angels are playing very good baseball. So it's certainly a time to worry. I'm not saying time to panic, but certainly, you know, 40 games into a season, they should be much better than this.
The other part that has been, you know, disappointing with this team is that obviously – you can't necessarily count on the same product that they had out there in 2021 and say that's exactly who they can be in 2022, because it was very, very rare to watch them do what they did last year. But we know bullpens are very fickle, but that was one of the things that really held down the fort for this team. They have really struggled. Is it a product of just, hey, this is an example of what happens when you rely on your bullpen so much, or has – you know, a couple injuries really set this team back in your mind?
Yeah, I wouldn't say injuries. I mean, every team has got a ton of injuries. I mean, New York Mets, you know, lost their two aces in Jacob deGrom and Max Scherzer. And, you know, they're running away with that division. So not injuries. Yeah, bullpen, you never know from one year to next. You know, one year a guy is great. One year a guy is struggling. Seems like that's always a volatile mix. I think they, you know, certainly expected more from their young players, you know, particularly the way they finished up. I mean, they were in the playoff race the last day of the season. I don't think anybody saw regression just because the guys were young. It's not like anybody was having career years. So that's the biggest surprise.
Jerry DePoto this morning said, in terms of adding talent, the trade market isn't really hot this time of the year. Do you see any names around the league becoming available maybe in the next couple months?
Yeah, I mean, I think it should be it's certainly going to be a seller's market more than a buyer's market, because so many teams will be in the race because of the expanded postseason. So, yeah, you know, plenty of outfielders be available. You know, whether it's a Seattle does have Justin Upton coming back, joining the team in about a month. Certainly, guys like Tommy Pham are out there. At some point, if the Mariners are the way they are now, you wonder whether they'll be sellers. I mean, is Justin Upton going to be there for, just 2 months and be traded? There's certainly, pitchers out there too. But, when you're the Mariners and, you worked this hard to rebuild and get the young prospects, you're not going to just turn around and trade those prospects. So I don't see them being aggressive in the trade market. Just because they don't want to give up, the top prospects they fought for so long to get.
Bob, one of the hardest things to do in baseball is, even when you have a number one farm system, is to be able to integrate that farm system at the right time for each player and for them to be in a landing spot that, provides an environment for them to be successful and for them to all take off at the same time, right? We've seen it happen in recent years, but it is difficult. It's a unique challenge. As you look at the Mariners and the way they've constructed their roster, have they provided that landing spot for these prospects to be able to come up and have success and allow this rebuild for it to be successful as they start bringing these guys up?
Well, you certainly wonder about that. I mean, with Jerry Kelnick's struggles and different guys not taking the next step, looks like Julio Rodriguez is taking the next step. If fans don't want, you get tired of hearing about prospects. You want to see it, translate to the major league level. The old joke in baseball is you want to be the cover of Baseball America or having the best prospects, or the cover of Sports Illustrated and having a parade. It's like you got to turn it around at some point. The Cubs did that. The Houston Astros have done that. Pittsburgh and Baltimore are in the middle of doing that now. But, yeah, you kind of wonder about, why aren't these guys taking the next step? Is it a development thing? Is it an atmosphere, atmosphere thing? So that's why I think you need some veterans in there to help out the young guys. Because right now they're struggling. And I think, sometimes you know where to turn. And, when you start struggling like that, too, and you're young, you kind of think, okay, well, will I ever get it right? Am I about to get sent back to the minor leagues?
When you're looking around the American League, there are some teams that have underperformed despite expectations and others that have surprised. The Angels certainly falling into the latter category and the Blue Jays getting off to a slow start along with the Red Sox. How do you see the league in terms of a team that maybe has pleasantly surprised you in a team that's kind of disappointing?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the two most disappointing teams in the American League are certainly Seattle and the Detroit Tigers. Tigers were in a rebuild, too. They had a winning record after the first week of May. Spent $140 million on a shortstop. It just kind of collapsed. I mean, they're right in the same position as Seattle. Now, they've had a ton of injuries, particularly starting rotation, so maybe, a little different. And then surprises, Minnesota Twins lost, maybe 87 games last year in and here they are kind of running away from the pack in the AL Central. Mm-hmm. So I think they definitely have to be the biggest surprise in the American League. I mean, you don't expect the Yankees to play, as well as they are, but you certainly expect them to contend. But I got to say the Minnesota Twins, and to a degree the Angels as well, would be biggest surprises in the American League.
Hey, Bob, last question here. One thing that we've all discussed here in Seattle is why couldn't the Mariners land some of the top free agents that they've been linked to? And obviously there's a million and five reasons why it didn't happen. And some of those guys aren't actually panning out. But in terms of Seattle as a landing spot, the Mariners as a landing spot, do you think that conversations with agents and players are that no matter what, Seattle has to overpay and that Seattle truly may just be a no-go for some players?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I think Trevor Story was almost went there. It was, other players too. I mean, people love Seattle. I know, GMs and managers say, oh, what a great place to, live. What a great place to, play. Terrific fan base. But it all comes down to winning. Nobody wants to play for a loser. And so the big thing is, once you win, players want to be on a winner.
Yeah.
They don't want to say, wow, it's been 21 years since they made the postseason. I don't want to, be on a team that continues that. So it's more the winning and losing than anything else. The travel's a problem. And, you know, you got to live with that. But otherwise, there's really no negatives that come to Seattle except for the win-loss record.
Bob, I lied. I have another question now.
She does that often,
no,
Bob. I'm so
Bob,
sorry.
Bob, I don't. This will be the last one. We know you're busy. You have to get going. But you mentioned Trevor Story almost coming here. Do you have any idea why he might have ended up going to Boston instead, or why it wasn't Seattle?
I think he just wanted more money. I think he saw what Corey Seager got, you know, $325 million. He's Marcus Semien got $175 million from Texas, a place where he wanted to go. So I think he thought, let me get as much money as possible. Yeah. And really, it was kind of holding out hope for Texas. And then, of course, the lockout came. And then it became a situation where I think Seattle's interest had dropped off. And then he said, okay, who's left? Mm-hmm. And it was, Boston giving up pretty much the same amount of money. I think Seattle was at one point. And there was a time, too, he didn't want to switch positions. Of course, he did with Boston. So I think it was more of a timing thing than anything else, choosing Boston over Seattle.
Interesting. He is USA Today's Bob Nightingale. Bob, thank you so much for taking the time. We really appreciate it.
Sure, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. This hour of Jake and Stacey brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Very, very, very quickly before we get to Four Down Territory, interesting answer on the Trevor Story thing. I had heard multiple reports, one being that Trevor Story didn't want to be at second base long-term, and that obviously with J.P. Crawford being here at shortstop, that was their long-term shortstop, and there might be a road to switching back to shortstop with Boston. Interesting to hear that maybe Seattle's interest may have dropped a little bit after the lockout, or that it may have actually come down to money with Boston just frankly offering a little bit more than Seattle.
Yeah, I honestly don't know if it was Boston offering more. See, this is where I would like to have more details in this, is that if everything was equal, Stacey, that he was going to pick Boston. It's a winning franchise. It's, there's a lot more to, you're more willing to trade over to second base to, be a part of a franchise like the Boston Red Sox versus the Mariners. And that money could have played a major factor in this, that Trevor Story would have wanted the Mariners to not match, but they would have had to have exceed. Mm-hmm. And that would have fallen into a lot of the conversation that we have talked about with the Mariners, needing to be comfortable with having to, quote unquote, overpay for some of these top prospects, some of these top free agents. If you're going to pull away a top free agent who's being, has other suitors from other winning organizations, The only chip that you have to play is money. That's it. So I think that stands out to me. And gosh, we got to get into some of the things that he said later on in the show, because there's a lot to dive into.
I will say as a final thought that now, again, this is all speculative. Okay, so it's only like if all these things are true, then I feel this way. Know that if Trevor Story was very comfortable staying at second, and if he would have been comfortable coming to Seattle for the right cost, and if that cost would have been not much more than what Boston offered, and frankly, even much more than Boston offered, would have been fine with me. If all of that were true, and that Seattle, for some reason, after the lockout, didn't really want to spend that money anymore or wasn't willing to spend money on Trevor Story, I would be very disappointed in the Mariners' decision to do that. And I think Mariners fans would be very disappointed, rightfully so, that this team could have really added and chose not to because of money, and yet they remain in the bottom third in payroll. Like, it's only if all of that were true, right?
Yes.
There are many other reasons he may not have come here, including not wanting to have a long-term position change, or maybe just not wanting the travel miles. Who knows, right? But if what Bob Nightingale hints at is that it was money and then just a dissipating interest, frankly, I think fans would be very right to be disappointed.
It also would make a lot more sense why Trevor Story went off against the Mariners in
that
series.
Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, will Colin Kaepernick be able to play his way onto the field if the Raiders sign him?
I will be surprised if he is able to do so. I will be surprised if Colin Kaepernick is able to play his way onto the roster, if that's indeed what is going to be asked of him, rather than being just fully committed, right? Stacey, there's a difference in terms of signings and intentions. sometimes you have organizations that sign players that say, hey, this guy is going to be our backup quarterback, or this guy is going to be, you know, an opportunity to compete as for the starting position, and we are going to force the issue. And whether it his performance in training camp is not going to deter how we feel about this particular player. I don't know what the Raiders organization, their conviction in this signing would be. Hey, we're giving him a chance and an opportunity to compete with the rest of the backups in this spot, or we're signing him to be the backup to Derek Carr. Those are two different situations in and of itself. But if Colin Kaepernick has to compete to get himself onto the roster for this team, I don't think that he is going to ultimately blow everyone away with his performances in the preseason. I would be shocked to see Derek Carr be in a position where he gets hurt, because he's been relatively stable at the position for a long time. It would be shocking to see Colin Kaepernick get onto the field with the Las Vegas Raiders. However, I do think that he would have a decent chance to earn a backup job with the Raiders if given the opportunity, and also depending on what the Raiders' intentions are behind the signing of Colin Kaepernick. And those are a lot of ifs, but Colin Kaepernick has to be able to show and display that after 5 years, 6 years of him being out of the NFL, that he has the ability and the talent to be able to step right into that pocket and be able to make decisive decisions. And that's something that is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Second down. Both Kyler Murray and Lamar Jackson are currently sitting out of OTAs for their respective teams. Which quarterback situation do you believe is shakier?
What I actually believe is shakier, people look at Kyler Murray's situation and say, oh man, look at the drama that they've had over the offseason. The GM, the ownership continue to be very, very steadfast in their comments about Kyler Murray and wanting him to be a, you know, long-term answer for the organization. GM Steve Keim even going out and saying, hey, we feel confident that we're going to get an extension done this summer. Lamar Jackson's situation, however, I believe is more shaky with the Baltimore Ravens. He is negotiating his own deal. It has not gone well. He had Hollywood Brown, who is one of his good friends, leave for the Arizona Cardinals and want to be traded because he did not want to be part of a running system anymore. If you're a quarterback like Lamar Jackson, you don't want to be labeled as a running quarterback, and you're not going to be able to survive in this league being a running quarterback for the rest of your career. The longevity goes into transitioning yourself into a great quarterback that can use his legs highly, highly effectively, right? It's what Michael Vick ultimately had to do and what he became when he was an MVP after he returned from the huge scandal that he was a part of, and returned with the Philadelphia Eagles. Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens, I believe, are on very, very shaky ground, and it's a situation that should be closely monitored, because I would not be surprised to see Lamar Jackson at one point in time with this organization say that they want to part ways and that Lamar Jackson is seeking a trade most likely after this coming season. So definitely a situation to keep your eye on.
Third down. It's that time of the year. Lots of NFL teams receiving hype because anything is possible. But which team's hype do you feel is well-deserved?
There's a few teams that you could go with.
Okay. I knew it wouldn't be one team. We should have known, Curtis.
No. I'm picking one team, but there's a few teams that you could go with. But the team that I am getting on the hype train for, and I know we're doing this a little early, but the team that I'm absolutely going to buy the hype of is the New Orleans Saints. I think the New Orleans Saints, in a weaker NFC and also in a weak South division, I think the New Orleans Saints have a great chance to surprise everybody this year. Look at everything that they had to overcome last year. All the difficulty that they had to go through last year at the quarterback position, the musical chairs that were there, the fact that Michael Thomas was not there. You had zero receiving talent out there on the edge for the Saints. I mean, it was a disaster. It was a disaster of a season. But I really do feel, even though Sean Payton decided to retire, I think that they're in a prime position, that they've got a really good roster that people are underestimating. I mean, they were 9-8 last year, 9-8, and they were all over the place. I think they've got a tremendous chance to be a playoff team and to be a team that, you know, becomes a squad that everyone's kind of afraid to play a little bit.
Fourth down. Jake, you've been given a truth serum. Congratulations.
Oh,
great. You can give it to someone and they're going to drink it. You get one unfiltered, honest answer to a Seattle sports question about this offseason. What question do you ask?
Oh, man. Who do I give it to?
Now, let me give out some choices in case anyone's wondering. What really happened between Russell and Pete Carroll and John? It could be, did Trevor Story, turn down more money from Seattle? How much money could Jerry DePoto work with this offseason? It could be, you know what I mean? Like, there's all kinds of questions you could ask.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could be Jimmy Lake stuff if you're a UW fan. It could be.
I don't care about any of that.
I don't have to make it Seattle. It could be any sports question. I'll expand it to any sports question if there's.
I'm deciding between.
I know mine.
John Stanton and how much of a budget he gave Jerry DePoto
That's
this offseason, or Jerry DePoto. I'm gonna give it to Jerry DePoto. I'm gonna give it to Jerry DePoto and truth serum, because you'll get both answers, his evaluation and also what he was given the green light for, and why did you not spend more money or be able to land a prospect like, or a free agent like Trevor Story or any of the other top free agents that were out there. That's what I would decide to do.
I would give it to John Stanton, and I would ask him specifically questions about like how much money he was willing to spend, whether there were limitations he gave Jerry DePoto, what the limit was, and what happened with Trevor Story. Like, I would want to know at the very, very top, what are the constraints?
Mm-hmm.
All right. It is Jake and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station
if
on
only.
710.
If only.
710 and the Seattle Sports app. The Timeline is coming your way next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline. I'm Jake and Stacey, telling you the top stories you're going to see on your own timelines. And let's start here with a scandal, a scheme. In fact, this one's actually pretty gross. So former World Series of Poker winner Corey Ziedman was arrested on fraud and money laundering charges related to a sports betting scheme that brought in more than $25 million from alleged victims. Here's what happened. Corey Ziedman and his associates, whoever he was working with for this scheme, would place ads on various radio markets. The ads would tell listeners, hey, you know, you can get sports betting advice and information and help from this number. So call this number for some smart investment advice or like sports betting help. So they call the number. When they called the number, they would then tell them, hey, we've got this information. This is Corey and his associates. They would have these fake business names, and they would say that they had privileged or inside information from team physicians, television executives, and all these other people. And then listeners were then asked to pay for that information, which Ziedman, this is from USA Today, Ziedman and his associates claimed would lead to no-risk wagers. According to prosecutors, several victims sent payments totally in excess of $25 million. Many victims drained their life savings, being told that this is money that you're investing in. It's safe. It's a safe bet. Don't worry. We've got you. Of course, that's not actually what it was.
Wow.
He took their money and used it instead on international vacations, a multi-million dollar residence, and what else? Poker tournaments.
What scum.
Yeah.
What absolute scum. Stacey, before we go on, I do have to ask the question.
Uh-huh. Did I call the number?
Did you have your life savings drained by Corey Ziedman?
No,
that's,
no I did
okay,
not.
Okay. So before we proceeded, I just needed to ask that question.
I only place food bets. Very carefully, I place food bets only.
And,
okay.
And what, Slipknot t-shirts?
Slipknot t-shirt
bets. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good. I, if there's anyone out there that is, you know, promising that, you know, in terms of food bets, then I will become worried about you. But I just wanted to ask just to make sure so that I could be as sensitive as possible to this situation.
Thank you very much.
I can't say what I want to say, but what guts does it take
the gall for someone
to put out advertisements like this publicly and to think you're going to get away with it? I mean, he did for quite some time, right?
From 2004 to 2020, 16 years he was doing this.
Wow. 16 years riding the high life.
Yeah.
Wow. I hope for those 16 years he really enjoyed it, because I'm sure he's really going to enjoy being in prison. That's going to be a nice trade off for him. Yeah. So, and he deserves every bit of it. What a clown.
I find that anytime I read about scams, it could be a scam like this, where again victims are clearly lied to. Allegedly, it's an ongoing lawsuit, or it could be multi-level marketing schemes, pyramid schemes, whatever. And I find that sometimes the sentiment is, oh, you should know better. That, oh, it's in part the fault of the victim because they bought into this thing that so clearly is a lie. And I think what that does is blames victims for falling victim to the cruel intentions of someone else. Rather than look at that person who had the cruel intentions and say, this is wrong. You should not have done this. And also, important to remind you guys, a lot of people that fall for stuff like this, I don't know if this is the case with Ziedman, but in the case of a lot of multi-level marketing schemes or Ponzi schemes, mm-hmm. it's usually like elderly people, people that don't have someone to tell them that this isn't the case, people who may not understand the technology behind someone.
Correct.
Or behind something. And again, like, what might seem like a very obvious no-brainer, don't click this to you, may not seem like that to someone else, and it doesn't make that person stupid. It just means that they were defrauded by someone.
Well, there's no question about that, right? And but also that this guy was putting his own name attached to it, right? So there is some credibility that is, you know, if anybody is a fan of Corey Ziedman from a poker perspective, like that you've added some credibility to this scheme. And my gosh, I mean, you can see how it's easy for some people who, I mean, honestly, I would never do something like this. At betting never has really interested me, no matter how many times you try to get me to do it. But I, you know, so I have a hard time, you know, getting that mental space that other people do. But there's so many people that bet all the time. And if you have somebody like him and you know his name or you've seen him on TV and you're, gosh, man, he's a great poker player. And he's telling me he can give me mm-hmm. advice. Like, I can see why people get caught up in that and wrapped up in that very quickly. And just, I feel sad for those people that have been victims of this scheme. It's awful. Yeah. Absolutely awful.
Well, and just shame on you. I have, like, a weird pet peeve with stealing where, like,
well, that's well, probably a good thing.
Especially by people
that's
who.
That's probably a good thing to be mad about.
Like, the idea of cheating your way to something feels like. It's
yes.
just gross. Next story here in the timeline, this one from the NBA playoffs. Joel Embiid, 76ers star, tweeted about the Celtics playoff game against the Heat. Now, that doesn't matter. A lot of people were tweeting about it. However, Joel Embiid tweeted something very specific. He said, quote, Miami needs another star. Then a separate tweet, he said, Boston just has too many weapons. Now, if you are an average NBA fan, or maybe you're just not paying too much attention, you're like, yeah, you know, I kind of agree with it. Like, in this case, Miami was really struggling. But if you are a 76ers fan or a Miami fan or a NBA fan that watches this stuff more closely, you're wondering if Joel Embiid means he wants to be that star for the Heat.
And I don't know how much he is meaning that because, you know, you do have athletes that are nowadays watching these games and tweeting out and giving live reactions and all that. And maybe he meant nothing by it. But it is interesting because the Miami Heat, if there was a star that they could use in terms of, you know, the way that their team is shaped up, it could use a really good quality scoring center. Someone of his skill sets. So, you know, you do start to wonder, you start to put two and two together and wonder if he is Joel Embiid, you know, advocating for the Miami Heat to catch the hint for Pat Riley. Hey, Pat Riley, did you see my tweet?
Yeah.
Come get me.
I like it when people shamelessly tag other people.
Right.
last story here in the timeline. Pac-12 week one, which starts September 3rd. Kickoff times have been announced. Wazoo will be on the Pac-12 network, 6:30 p.m. kickoff time. UW will play Kent State on FS1 at 7:30 p.m.
Curtis, don't do it.
Curtis, you
hold
said
back.
Curtis,
you said you would sacrifice.
You said you would give it up, Curtis.
I'm just saying.
No, let me remind
you. Late night kickoffs.
Stop talking.
Very much a Pac-12 thing.
Curtis.
It's okay.
Fine. That's fine.
I can rag on the Pac-12
all
I
want.
That's
fine. That's fine.
As an alum of a Pac-12 school, I get that.
Yes,
opportunity
fair.
Lots of times.
In case anyone is wondering, we all agreed to sacrifice one thing for the Mariners to win the series against the Astros and try to get back on track here. Curtis agreed to give up making fun of UW I'll say for the week. Jake agreed to, now I think, oh, Jake agreed to give up late night snacking.
I can't believe I did that.
I'm regretting it right now. I agreed to give up a reality show.
I'm just saying Washington will have a tough time because they're playing a team that's actually Division One in week one.
Curtis, you're already breaking it.
My bad, Curtis, you can't do it. I'm sorry.
Curtis, we need to beat the Mariners. The Mariners are swept. It's your fault. I'm going to look back at this
and know that
all of us were willing to make sacrifices.
Okay, from this moment onward.
Jeez, man. Now we got to redo the
segment.
Look, Arizona's won one game in three years.
We've got to do the whole segment all over again.
We have to do it all over. You have to choose something else now. We have to do it all over again.
Dang it.
God. Why are Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais talking trades in May? Let's find out, Curtis. That's next.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studio, this is Seattle Sports Station. You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union.
Jerry DePoto was on this morning. Wasn't with Mike Salk. It was the Mike Salk Show. Mike Lefko and Michael Bumpus. Lots of mics in this morning on that one.
A few too many.
Jerry DePoto talked about a number of things.
You can only be a mic if you're going to host the morning
show.
That's
exactly right. Including where he sees the roster going, what they can do to help it, what guys they're going to get back. But one thing stood out to us, and that was him talking about a trade from 2018. Here's why. Here's the full quote, Jerry DePoto being asked about trades around this time in the year.
You know, Scott and I were talking about it last night, actually. The trade that we made back in May, I think, of 2018 with the Rays that brought the Nord Span and Alex Colomay to the Mariners. It was a very unusual and I guess it was a unique trade in its timing. You usually don't see trades until June, July. And I don't sense that the market is really cooking yet. There's a couple of teams that may be willing to move, but we still see ourselves as a young, growing team. And we watched it a year ago. We watched ourselves claw out of this hole and frankly, get back. We were in first place by the middle of June.
Now, you might be hearing that and think absolutely nothing about it. Okay, yeah, trades this early in the season are tough, and maybe Jerry and Scott, being GM and manager, talk a lot and are friends. Who knows? However, you may also be hearing it and wonder, well, why are Jerry and Scott Servais talking trades in May? Especially, why are they talking last night in particular after A, day game, but B, a very tough series loss to the Oakland A's? And I wonder, Jake, if I'm hearing this clip, I'm wondering, like, well, did Scott call up Jerry and say, like, hey, I need help here, man. What can we do? Right? Like, that's one possibility.
Yeah.
And what if he said, I know that we've made a trade before. I know that we've done this before. What are our options? What's going on? And that this is a recent conversation they've had, which is why Jerry's bringing up that, like, yeah, here's an example of this happening. But overwhelmingly, those instances are rare.
Yeah, they are rare. And why are they bringing that up? Because, you know, Denard Span worked out for them, right? You talk about a trade. I mean, he hit 272. You know, he had an OPS of 113. You know, he was a welcomed addition to that lineup. And were they able to make the playoffs? Unfortunately, no. We know that story, but they were a very competitive team pretty much all the way down to the wire of the season. And that was a nice trade for them. So what is that? Why is that important? Put that in context. You're 100% right that probably you're looking at this conversation. Scott Servais is saying, hey, Jerry, I need some help. Is there any chance that we could pull off a Denard Span like trade of some kind to be able to give us a boost in our lineup? I mean, we need the help. Or in our bullpen, is there something that we can do? Because if I'm Scott Servais right now, and you can talk about, you know, managerial decisions on lineup and when you're bringing out, you know, guys from the bullpen, and that's all part of the gig, that's part of the job, and so far that has not worked out as well as it did last year. Scott Servais was absolutely brilliant and deserved a lot of credit for that. This year it has not gone as well. To Scott Servais's defense a little bit here, who has been consistent in that bullpen?
Mm-hmm.
Who's been consistent?
Paul Sewald.
That's it. I mean, Diego Castillo has shown up over the last couple days since he's been out there. But in terms of that entire group, Sergio Romo, you got a pretty good idea what you're going to get out of him right now. But outside of that, this group, I mean, it has been all over the place. There's times Andre Munoz looks like an absolute star, mm-hmm. and there are times where he is one of the most hittable relievers in baseball. I mean, it's just like it is really tough to be able to turn to a bullpen that no one outside of Paul Sewald right now really is stepping up and just being absolute nails for you on a consistent basis, and that is a big difference from this group this year to last year. And so I you took a look at injuries, you look at depth, you look at, you know, all these different things. And if I'm Scott Servais, I don't blame him for going to Jerry DePoto and saying, hey, what can we do? Is there anything that we can do? And if there is, please, please, let's be aggressive about approaching this.
Well, I in particular don't blame him, because whose head is first to roll? Whose seat gets hot first? Usually it's the most visible part of the organization in the front office, which is the manager, right? I know not technically part of the front office, but the coaching staff. That's who gets the heat. That's when people are talking about the hot seat for organizations that are floundering, that are struggling, that are sinking, whatever it is. People look at the manager and say, is his job safe? If I'm Scott Servais, I'm saying, I don't know, you know, what you were thinking I can do with a banged up roster, a bullpen that we didn't add a ton to, and guys that are also underperforming. Like, I can only do so much, right? So I'm sure that there's a lot of pressure that someone in that position would be feeling to say, well, what can you give me? What weapons can you give me where I can start to help turn this thing around? But I also, again, this is what's so fascinating about all of it, and why, when I asked you, hey, if you could have one question answered about the Seattle sports scene, like you get the truth about it, what question would it be?
Yeah.
Mine would be, what were the limitations on the Mariners offseason? Because is the issue that Jerry DePoto had a limit on what he could spend? And he said, hey, Scott, I don't know what to tell you. This is the best I could do for you. I know they can be better than this, though. Or is it that Jerry DePoto truly felt like these are the right pieces, I'm confident this is working, and he's still pretty steadfast in that and believes that the issue is that the players are underperforming or maybe not reaching expectations,
right?
Mm-hmm. Like, it's now, Jerry was very frank about saying we don't look like a championship roster right now, we're far from that.
Yeah,
so he's not delusional.
No,
he's
not
a smart person, but I would be curious to know, A, his complete belief in the roster when it's completely healthy. Whether he would genuinely like to add more, or whether he feels like this is a playoff roster, or B, I would also like to know, was he hamstrung as well? Was
Correct.
He handcuffed? Was there only so much he could give Scott?
Yeah, and we don't know the answers to those questions that we would desperately love to find out. But you know, I am just, what I'm fearful of, Stacey, you just mentioned, what would this team look like fully healthy? I'm afraid that we will not get the chance to see that. Mm. Like, I am just very fearful that we will not get a chance to see this team fully healthy, you know, at any point during the season. And when you're scuffling like this, you've got to have a couple things happen in your favor. Number one, you've got to have health. You've got to be healthy, okay? Number two, you have to have players step up. Last year, who stepped up? I mean, we knew about their bullpen and how good they were and how they rose to the occasion every single time. We also saw guys like, because it was Mitch Haniger, it was the Mitch Haniger,
JP
Ty
improved.
France, Kyle Seager show. Then JP improves and really starts to lengthen your lineup a little bit. And I say lengthen a little bit because it wasn't by much, but adding another contributor like JP Crawford was a huge deal for that lineup. And that was great to see. And then it just felt like every single night there was some random hero of the day in the back part of the lineup that helped you win games. And, you know, right now I don't know who I can turn to and say, this guy is going to be the reason, or these two guys are going to be the reason that the team turns around, outside of Jesse Winker. And I am losing confidence that that's going to happen, that that's just going to happen at any point this year. And Jesse Winker actually might, being a leadoff hitter, might actually be the best thing for him, because I don't see any power in his game. And maybe just trying to be an on-base guy is the best way that he can contribute to the team this year for the Mariners. I don't know. But you got to have one of those, you got to have both of those things happen if things are going to turn around.
All right. The national media is really not feeling the Seahawks, but I think even you will be surprised to see where one expert has them ranked. That's next.